Today on Mr. Media, I'll talk to humor writer Rob Kuttner, whose new ebook is called The Future According to Me. Stick around, I already know what's ahead for you. An interview with a writer from Conan O'Brien's late night talk show. Hey, you know, this whole business of being futurological, it's not as hard as it looks. So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview. You know, MrMedia.com, MrMedia.com. Step by and check it out. There are more than 900 archived celebrity and pop culture interviews for your listening pleasure. The show is brought to you today by Audible. Audible is offering Mr. Media listeners a free audiobook download and a 14-day trial offer to give you a chance to check out their very cool service. I love listening to books on tape. If you've never tried it before, actors or sometimes the authors themselves read to you. It's great for the commute, the beach, or even unwinding before bed. You can choose a free audiobook from Audible's enormous library of best-selling titles, including The Help by Catherine Stockett, A Stolen Life by J.C. Dugard, and Bossy Pants by Tina Fey. Here's an excerpt from Bossy Pants, read by the author, Tina Fey.
Because I am nothing if not an amazing businesswoman, I researched what kind of content makes for best-selling books. It turns out the answer is one-night stands, drug addictions, and recipes. Here, we are out of luck. But I can offer you lurid tales of anxiety and cowardice. Why is this audiobook called Bossy Pants? One, because the name Two and a Half Men was already taken. And two, because ever since I became an executive producer of 30 Rock, people have asked me, is it hard for you being the boss, and is it uncomfortable for you to be the person in charge? You know, in that same way they say, gosh, Mr. Trump, is it awkward for you to be the boss of all these people? I can't answer for Mr. Trump, but in my case, it is not.
You can also download The Profiler, written by famed criminal profiler Pat Brown and yours truly, which Pat will read to you personally. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/radio. Again, that's audibletrial.com/radio for your free audiobook. Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience in the year 3000, in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. Futurological, futurosophy, anthropology. If it has anything to do with what's unknown about tomorrow, chances are Rob Kuttner's got a made-up word to fit it. Now, let's set pretense aside and be honest. Rob Kuttner knows as much about the future as you or I. The difference between him and us? He's certifiably funny. Now, Kuttner just published a new ebook, The Future According to Me, that makes a sweet addition to his growing library of product, including Apocalypse How and his contributions to Jon Stewart's best-selling work, America. And speaking of Stewart, Kuttner was a 4-time Emmy Award-winning staff writer for The Daily Show. That was before joining Conan O'Brien on The Tonight Show and his new late-night show on TBS, Conan. And before those gigs, Kuttner wrote for Dennis Miller Live on HBO. You know, Dennis Miller. That was back when Miller was still funny and had something that an average person would recognize as a career. Anyway, Rob Kuttner, welcome back to Mr. Media.
Hi, nice to be here.
Right. Really want to talk about Dennis Miller now, don't you?
Absolutely. You're cutting things off to a good start.
Well, you know, I got to get my licks in first, because I know when I'm talking to somebody who is paid to be funny, I'm way outclassed.
At least you can draw blood.
Yeah, well, that's true. That's true. He can't possibly find me on the internet, right?
Yeah.
So, Rob, let me ask you, is predicting the future, you know, similar to being farsighted and nearsighted? I mean, it's, in a sense, like the amazing Kreskin's been on with me 3 or 4 times now, and his futurosophy is usually limited to, you know, like a year or so ahead, maybe months, but you are futurologically decades ahead.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I actually went to an optometrist before I wrote the book, and he put those lenses and said, "Better like this, better like that." Except, you know, except then he dilated my eyes with that liquid, and then I started writing. I couldn't see a word, and I think that helped.
Does that help making up words when you can't actually see the keyboard or what you're typing?
Yeah, well, the most important thing is to get into your computer and like destroy the autocorrect, because that thing has a mind of its own. And it's like the sort of mother-in-law on your computer. It's like, I think you want to say irregardless, or say regardless, not irregardless. They should have a talking one, I think. That's my biggest future prediction.
That there will be?
Talking autocorrect, yeah.
Talking autocorrect.
Oh, and then the second prediction is that computers will all be shut out by people.
That would be appropriate, I think.
Yeah.
That would be very appropriate. Now, when did you first discover that you had this gift for seeing the future?
Well, it really is. It's the kind of gift that you can't re-gift. You know, it's sort of a sort of a blessing and a blessing, really. I don't think it's that I have some particular talent for it. I think that I just have a certain predilection for it. Every time I pick up the paper or I read stuff online, everyone is always trying to guess what the new if device is going to be, or what's going to like transform everything. And something does transform everything for about 6 months, and then Apple comes out with another thing that transforms that. So I always think ahead. I sort of see like what could that lead to one day if everyone if everyone bought the iPad Nano, we'd all have tiny little radios to carry around right now. And then we'd have all this room for our wallets, and we'd have all the room for all the money we're making, right? See?
Got it all figured out.
I'm an economist.
Do you, what was I going to say? Do you feel that this power of yours to see the future, do you use it for good or for evil?
Well, it depends on the buyer, really. Like, I have a sort of constant bidding war. I have an eBay account where, if evil pays better, then I'll consider that. Maybe more like shades of gray, like chaotic evil or lawful good. It depends on the – I'm open to all buyers.
All right. And then one of the things I noticed in reading the book on my Kindle, which it's funny. I can't really actually hold up your book for people. We'll show the image. But, folks, trust me, it's on there.
I think that's someone from the Renaissance in your action.
Yeah, well, it's in there.
That's a terrible author photo, I have to say. I mean, that is really not flattering.
It's, I see. It's on here. It's in the list somewhere between Baba Booey's book and and Flowers for Algernon. Go figure.
There you go. Good company.
Well, I was going to say that the future, according to Rob Kuttner, seems to be rather alien in many ways.
There are some scenarios where there are aliens who land. That sort of field has been mined pretty well, but I thought of a few alternatives where I have hipster aliens who land on Earth and sort of gentrify everything, but with a decided air of condescension towards us. They're not really trying to destroy us or eat our flesh like Gentilians. They're just sort of like trying to wear down our souls a little bit, one new record album at a time. Or another scenario is that they're aliens who are very beneficent and bring us all kinds of technology and fix all our problems, if only we will accept the love and worship of their god, Kajul, the great nephew of the great Obtusus.
See, now, I was wondering how well you would do at remembering all those bizarre names like the...
Not too well, not too well.
It's just crazy. The Zozonians, was that one?
Sure.
Exo.
Yeah, that's right. That's where the aliens are from.
No one has ever said it out loud. You didn't know what it would sound like.
No, I think we might be in trouble now. It's like Pixel Flick. It might have destroyed a dimension in the universe just by saying it.
Oh, it's like in the Harry Potter films that you're not supposed to say what's his name's name.
Volda.
Yeah.
Even though they say it all the time, I never understood that. It's like,
His
name can only be said 9 times a day.
Right, and then at the end of the movie, they're like, oh, come on, you can say his name. It's like, you've been saying it all along. What's the deal?
Right, exactly. It's like when Silent Bob finally speaks. And Silent Bob's like, oh, he has a voice.
Yeah,
right. A little like Kevin Smith.
Yeah, he never said, right. And he never shuts up.
Right.
In the future, will there be more Harry Potter movies? My daughter is very eager to know.
Oh, that's a good question. Well, it's interesting because J.K. Rowling has also sort of like started this whole like digital endeavor with her, what is it called, Potterphobia or something? Potterphilia. Pottermore. She has her own like digital site where you can buy all of her. Now, I guess that was a big deal because the booksellers were like, "This is the only book we're selling."
Why is this? And you're taking it away from us.
Right. So, I have a feeling she will probably find ways to like to do like spin-offs or have ways where it's not exactly Harry Potter, but it's like, the Ron Weasley saga or like, but like one of the other Weasleys, like one of the 18 of the redheaded kids, like it's his own 800-page novel now, and everyone will buy it too. That's the real magic.
I'm holding out for the Dobby the house elf saga.
Dobby, R.I.P.
Yeah, right.
maybe his death was fake. You know, so he could come back, like, magnificent comeback, like all of us.
She is a clever woman. We must give her that.
Yeah, we will.
Yeah. How does the future that is foretold in the future, according to me, how does it jive with your view of the future in Apocalypse How?
Well, in Apocalypse How, I lay out only apocalypse scenarios, like how the world could really be destroyed. And although I have an upbeat attitude that could be a really great thing for humanity, perhaps the best thing ever to happen, ultimately they're all sort of scenarios of doom and devastation. In this book, I took a more broad range of views where things could work out great, or we could stay peaceful and not destroy each other and just develop our technology, but then some other quirk of human nature could also sort of derail us. Or, you know, I have one where everyone is in their sort of cocoon every day in their life womb, and they get all the nutrients they need and all the news and all the information. Presumably, Mr. Media would be the steady diet of news and information that people get directly into their cerebral cortex. But anyway, but then they're all like in their own cocoons. That sort of thing. So, you know, technology can lead us in a lot of great areas, and it also can lead us in a lot of horrible areas. So I think that I sort of like explored the wider range of how the planet could survive and how humanity could find other ways to destroy our lives, even while, you know, physically being okay. So I guess there's an underlying tone of cynicism as well, but there's also some hope as well, I think.
Cynicism in one of your books. I find that hard to...
I don't know where it comes from.
No.
I blame Potterphobia.
You know, by the way, I liked your names for Rowling's digital world a lot better than the one she came up with. I'd just like to go on record as saying that.
All right. You're a bold man.
I am. It's true. It's what all the girls say. But seriously, Rob, enough about you. What does the future hold for me, Mr. Media?
Well, I think that one day you're going to finally finish that dissertation and be known as Dr. Media. I mean, look, I mean, the master's is great, and yes, you can teach in elementary schools, but, you know, both your mother and I are wondering when you're going to get serious about your studies.
Oh,
you know?
God, have you been talking to that old broad again?
Yeah, she has her own media as well. You should check it out. It's just media.
Old woman media, I think.
Right. She uses a toaster, so it's not quite fair. She doesn't know how to use a computer.
Now, since you've unleashed this talent for seeing the future on the world, have people been coming to you offering, you know, scads of money to know, as I was asking, you know, how the future will affect them?
You know, it's funny. I think I could actually have a lucrative sideline. Like, you know, people always want to use time travel to win sports gambling. Like, you know, who's going to win the World Series this week? The problem is I can see, like, only to the year, like, 2061. So I can tell you the Cubs won't win then. But, you know, I can tell you all the sports scores then, but no one really wants to bet, you know, 50 years in the future. So if I can just find a way to localize my talent so they can be of more use to people, then I could probably get more money from it.
Let me ask you this. In the future, speaking of fortune telling, in the future, will Bruce Springsteen write a song where instead of some old woman being the fortune teller in Asbury Park, it will be Rob Kuttner?
In other words, you're asking if Bruce Springsteen will write a song about me? I hope not, because usually most of his songs are about people who are out of work.
Oh.
In a way, it's like he's sort of the Black Widow of employment, I think. But, oh, great. Hey, well, here's the good news. You got a Springsteen song. Here's the bad news.
Oh, man. Way to take it to the extreme. Here, I'm just implying that maybe he'd write a song about you, and you've got him putting you on the unemployment line.
He has a skill set, and he should stick to that, I think. Yeah.
Probably true. Let me ask you a more 2011 question. Is this the first e-book that you've published?
It is. I know. It's probably like everyone's first e-book, I think, because there are only like 9 of them, I think. Yeah, it is. And it was kind of an experiment. You know, obviously I did the print publishing route before with the Apocalypse How. And, you know, it's great to have a book in your hand shown here, actual size.
Yeah.
Obviously I can't do that with the e-book. You know, it's sort of, it's existing as a cloud of electrons. It's in the cloud, as Steve Jobs would say. But it was an experiment to sort of get something out there faster and sort of in a more immediate way. You know, kind of like musicians are releasing their singles to their websites, and then you can download them if you like them, or, you know, take a sample or something like that. So for me, it was sort of a way to kind of like float something out there. And the amazing part is that a book takes about a year and a half to publish, you know, from writing to all the layout and, you know, all the hardware that's involved with that. And then an ebook, this took about 6 weeks, start to finish.
Well, that's what I was kind of curious about, that aspect of it. It was pretty quick, and were you able to do it all yourself?
Well, I mean, I did the writing. I mean, I pitched it to the editor at Amazon's department who does this, the Kindle Singles, which is sort of this niche of just short-length e-publishing. Mm-hmm. And we talked about the idea and narrowed down the concept, and then I went off and wrote it, and then they did the layout, and they did the funky cover design, which I imagine you're going to show at some point. And they did, you know, they put it on their website, which really could sort of its own, like, 21st century kind of marketing, because people go to Amazon, you know, as sort of a gatekeeper for books. So it's sort of, as opposed to having a not that my publicist did that much for the other book, but instead of hiring it's all coming out today. This is a therapy session. So you could be Dr. Media the therapist.
Apparently I'm well on my way.
That's right.
Maybe I can get credit for time served. I mean, yeah.
Exactly. You just have a way to create a digital sofa for people to lie on, I think, and then you're all set.
You know, we'll work on that. I like that idea. I like that idea a lot. Jeez. Will you do it again? Will you try this again?
I'm tempted. It's an interesting thing because it was kind of gratifying to just put something out there and see people react to it. And you can sort of track the sales, and it is actually selling, which is kind of cool. So I think if I had the right idea, this was actually just sort of a notion that I had in my head for a while, and I didn't know what the format was for it. I thought maybe I would do podcasts, but then you have to, like, deal with actors. And then you have to, you know, sound and all this. I had the idea of, like, just looking at kind of a grab bag of different future scenarios, and I never knew, like, how to use that. And then suddenly I was looking at this new thing on Amazon, and I thought, oh, people are doing these, like, kind of short-form explorations of ideas that aren't quite as long as a book, and I thought that would actually be a good genre for this. And so it kind of fit something that I was trying to do anyway. So if I have the right idea, I think, basically if I don't have quite another book in me, then...
It's a fascinating idea. Doing Mr. Media as a podcast, first audio and now with the video, was basically just because I had done some TV work for the short-lived Creature Comforts on CBS, this animated show. And Aardman, yeah.
That was a great show.
The executive producer of that was a friend of mine. I knew him when he was just a newspaper intern. And he hired me to do some interviews, and I went out and bought a digital recorder, which did not get a lot of use because the show ended after four weeks on the air, and I think they did a total of 6 episodes. And I was looking for something to do with the recorder, and I thought, oh, podcasting, you know, and here we are talking about...
Good repurposing and recycling.
You got to do what you got to do.
You got a tool using around, you got to use it.
That doesn't sound right.
If you have something to do with my water pick, I could use that.
Oh, okay. I was thinking, isn't that what got the governor of New York and that representative in trouble?
This is why you'll never be in politics.
Among many reasons. Yeah. All right. Let's take a quick break. This is Bob Andelman, and you're listening to and hopefully watching the Mr. Media interview with humorist Rob Kuttner, whose new ebook is The Future According to Me, and he's also a staff writer for a guy named Conan O'Brien. We'll be right back.
You worked too hard, you ate too much, the cheesecake made you greedy, let your aching head and stomach hear this message from old Speedy. Alka-Seltzer, plop, plop, fizz, fizz. Oh, what a relief it is. Plop, plop, fizz, fizz. Oh, what a relief it is. Ah, those speedy Alka-Seltzer bubbles burst into action to relieve your upset stomach and aching head fast. If only as directed. Oh, what a relief it is. What a relief.
Hi, this is Guy Kawasaki. You're listening to Mr. Media, you poor slob.
This is is Bob Andelman, and you're listening to and hopefully watching the Mr. Media interview with humorist Rob Kuttner, whose new ebook is The Future According to Me. He's also a staff writer for Conan O'Brien. And Rob, in this segment, I was hoping we could talk a little bit about Conan, because I'm thinking if you could really predict the future, you might have warned him what was coming a year or two ago.
I'm glad you put that together. A lot of people have asked me why I wrote about the book about the future. It's because I clearly have such a perfect bent for it. Since I left The Daily Show in New York and I moved myself and my family out to L.A. for The Tonight Show with Conan O'Brien, because that's a long-term institution. I mean, The Tonight Show, who's going to monkey with that? You know. So clearly that my vision of the future extends to about 8 months into the future, I would say. So that might complicate some of the work in my book, but yeah, it's definitely something about the entertainment business where it's the opposite of future prediction. Whenever my family asks me like what our travel plans are, if we're gonna bring the grandchild over to visit them on the East Coast, we say we don't really plan more than 2 weeks in advance.
has it changed your perspective on planning ahead?
You mean that experience or the? Yeah, I think that you just don't take anything for granted anymore. And I think we've been very happy on TBS, and I think they've been very happy with us. But, you know, we just don't assume anything. So I think you just sort of, you're always looking around at other things to keep busy. Maybe that's why I wrote a book, just to sort of keep something else going. And, but maybe that's a good philosophy for living, too, is that, you know, you never plan more than 2 weeks in advance. So that could be a bestseller.
Was the transition, the first transition between leaving The Daily Show and then joining The Tonight Show with Conan, was that difficult for you, or was it pretty smooth in terms of the type of comedy and the way it was set up?
It was smoother than I thought it would be, because when I went from Dennis Miller to Jon Stewart, that was a big transition. Like their styles are so different. Dennis is very wordy and uses vocabulary and complex structure, and Jon Stewart likes to sort of like to do a more conversational style, or more kind of a more from the gut reaction to things. I think maybe at that point I'd been on The Daily Show for 6 years and I'd been on Dennis Miller for 3 years, so maybe I was a little bit more seasoned and I was a little bit better able to switch gears. But it was definitely a different type of comedy, which was kind of in a way a good change of pace for me, because I would say The Daily Show would sort of go in depth on a couple of stories, and Conan, you go sort of in breadth, if that's a word, cover a wide variety of topics, you know, not necessarily political as well, but not necessarily in the same amount of depth. So that was kind of just like using different muscles, and I enjoyed that change.
There was a lot of concern before Conan took over The Tonight Show that his type of humor and the things he was doing later at night might not transition well. Any feeling, looking at it in retrospect, that maybe that was a legitimate concern, or were the issues there strictly the politics of NBC and Jay Leno and all that kind of stuff?
Well, two answers. I mean, I think there's definitely that element to it. There's definitely, like, maybe it might not have been the best fit in retrospect. And I think the other part of that is that I think, you know, Conan and the people who worked here felt we were trying to sort of, like, guess what that was supposed to be. And when you try to sort of, like, structure yourself and second-guess yourself like that, I think maybe that hampers the creativity in a way. Like, even if you do good work, like you're sort of like always looking around the corner and saying, am I doing this right? Is this this night show worthy? And so maybe if you're kind of like handcuffing yourself a little bit like that, maybe it did affect, you know, the type of show it was. And maybe that wasn't meant to be a fit after all. I mean, we definitely feel now on this show that we're free to do anything and everything we want to do, which is kind of a great feeling. And it's very cool. The little point I have to just bring in about that piece of history, which is very ancient history at this point, is that the piece that people don't know is that the big factor is that Jay Leno had negotiated a $150 million penalty clause into his contract, which was like a historic high. And that was actually the big elephant in the living room, which caused that whole thing to happen. And people didn't realize this until the whole conflict was happening, that this existed in his contract, because it had never been done before. So when you put something like that in your contract and you say, you pay me $150 million if you fire me, that means that they basically didn't have any choice. You know, they could have not negotiated that contract, but they wanted to.
There is that little aspect of it.
But, you know, just the short answer is that it is always about following the money. It always goes back to the money.
Well, you know, the thing that struck me as you were talking about the differences before, under Carson, The Tonight Show, just my perspective, The Tonight Show was always, it was full of sexual entendre. You know, it was a lot of flirting and a lot of things under the vest, which was appropriate for that era, the 60s and the 70s and, you know, the early 80s, that was the way that kind of stuff was carried out. Now it's a more in-your-face type of thing. So you went from Carson floating with the, Carol, what's her name, Carol, the blonde, big, you know, I can't think of her name. She was always coming out on the show and doing little bits with him. To, you know, then you go to Leno, who is completely asexual. There's nothing There's nothing sexual at all about him, his presentation, anything. And then you skip the next generation. You get to the next generation, and it's Conan, who's always flirting, and very much a Carson tradition. But then, of course, there's the masturbating manatee. You know, I mean,
maybe. So it was a pair. Well, yeah, I think it's interesting. You know, by the time Leno came around, there also was more segmentation of the late night market. Like, there was a lot more options. So I think, in a way, like, Leno was going for that, you know, more older conservative audience. And, you know, there were other options. You know, Arsenio Hall kind of broke ground with that. And then now there's, like, I think there's about 800 late night shows on at this point. So, you know, that you can go elsewhere to get, and I guess the advertisers figure that we're going to get the more conservative audience. Or maybe it just comes from Leno's personal style. I mean, I think he has a very hot sexual reactions with his cars. I mean, I don't think it's fair to say he's really asexual. There might be some love cars out there, you know, that he's responsible for.
I was going to say maybe trisexual, and the third leg would be the tailpipe. So the best thing, I mean, when you mention all these other late night shows, the best thing that probably even in his life that ever happened to George Lopez was waking up one morning and finding out that he'd be following Conan O'Brien. I mean, the happiest man in Hollywood probably had to be that guy.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think that lead-in has been good for that show. I don't know what the future is or not, but it's definitely part of, like, becoming part of, like, a late-night block, like, for TBS, I think. Like, Lopez was kind of an experiment, I think, that TBS was trying, and now there's, like, you know, there's definitely, like, a presence. Like, there's another place to turn, I think, at late night.
Well, he was like an island unto himself there, and then, you know,
exactly.
No other original content, and then suddenly he's got, you know, the best leading into him. Oh, you can't beat that.
Right.
It's like,
He's on at midnight, too, so maybe he can be a little crazier, too.
Well, it's like Letterman leading into Ferguson. I mean, a lot of people think Ferguson is extremely funny, and look who's leading into him. It's a great, you know, it's a great match.
Yeah. I don't know that.
let me ask you this. If you could, is there one example you could share of that time of the... what was going on between the two Lennon,
the recent
Leno,
unpleasantness?
Yeah, the recent unpleasantness between the Leno camp and the Conan camp. Anything that just stands out. It doesn't have to be nasty or anything. Just something about that time.
Well, you know, it was an amazing roller coaster because, you know, at first when the sort of news broke of what was going to happen and we sort of saw the shape of the river to come, it was, you know, it's obviously very depressing and there's a certain amount of denial. Like, I think it just started to hit. It was really just one compressed two-week period that seemed to take about 200 years. But a few days into the first week, we all sort of realized that it was ending, and we went home that first week and just really depressed, thinking that next week was probably our last week. And in a way, that was invigorating because, you know, you can do anything and just sort of prepare for the end. And Conan was, like, leading the charge in that idea. He would come in and say, like, we have the chance to make television history, and everyone's watching us, and our big charge here is to have fun with this. And he really led that. And we all sort of, like, took that, you know, I think in theory. And then the second Monday, it was pouring rain in L.A. And you understand, like, L.A., like, raining in L.A. is rarer even than walking. But this was, like, a torrential rainstorm, like, just horrible rain. And these hundreds of fans, these Coco people who we never were aware of, that's their scientific Latin name, Coco people.
Right.
We're just coming out and having these rallies at NBC Universal, like, and in huge rain, which people don't leave L.A. when the humidity goes above 51%, you know, so it's like, it was just amazing, and it just lifted everyone's spirits, and Conan and Andy came out and addressed them, you know, with the megaphone, and it was just like, all of a sudden then, it was depressing, but it was also like this amazing, like, emotional ride that we were on, with the ups and the downs, and this love from the public, and so, I mean, it's hard to describe it now, but to have both the dark and the light emotions so, like, powerfully intense at the same time, it made it pretty unforgettable, I think.
Well, we're going to run out of time shortly, and I got to ask you one more thing. When you have a number of writers on a show like Conan, you know what you did. The viewers don't know, you know, who does what. Yeah. Could you give us a sense of, like, one or two things that have, you know, kind of the Rob Kuttner stamp on them?
That I've done recently?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I write mostly the monologue jokes, but very recently on the show I did something I was very proud of. It took a lot of work from everybody, but it was, you know how all the movies now are all based on, like, childhood characters, cartoon characters turned into action heroes, like the Smurfs and the Transformers. So I did one that was the next extension of this, Mrs. Butterworth, the action movie trailer. And we had this actress came in, and we dressed her up like Mrs. Butterworth, and our effects department built a short machine gun, and she avenged the death of the Quaker Oats guys, and she... attacking Dora the Explorer, so it's still on the Team Coco website if you want to check it out. But I was really happy to be involved with that.
All right, maybe we can put up a link to that, share that with everybody.
Maybe we can sell it as a franchise to Mike or someone.
at the very least, it could be an e-book Kindle single.
Yeah, people want to read more about syrup. That's what I found.
I'm sure that's the case. Listen, folks, you can find or you can download Rob Kuttner's futurological new book, The Future According to Me, on the Kindle. Or you can order it right now at a great price at MrMedia.com. And, Rob, you wanted to take a second and explain to everybody how simple it really is.
You don't need a Kindle, which is the most common objection I've gotten from my in-laws. But the Kindle app, you can download. It takes about 10 seconds, and you can use it on any computer, on an iPhone, an iPad, on your PC desktop. And then it's just 99 cents, and it's like buying a book from Amazon. So it couldn't be easier.
It could not be easier.
That was my late night pitchman voice.
And it's a lot of fun, and it's a quick read. I was going to say it's a quick and dirty read. It's not dirty. Sorry. I hate to let you.
I was going to say it's the most fun you'll have for less than a dollar, but that sounded kind of skeezy as well.
Maybe just a little bit. Yeah. Now, Rob, do you have a website? Can people find you on social media, Facebook, Twitter, that kind of stuff?
Well, I'm only on MySpace, so people cannot find me.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you and Justin Timberlake keeping company
right.
There.
We have our lives for laugh once again. I'm at robkuttner.com. There's other samples of my work that I've written for other publications. And Apocalypse How, the book, that's one phrase with no punctuation. You can find out more about my print book, and also there's a link to buy this book as well.
Very good. Rob, pleasure to have you back a second time. Appreciate you enduring all these ridiculous questions, and thanks so much for joining us on Mr. Media today. Hope you come back again soon.
I hope you have a good future.
Well, you know, don't you? What are you not telling me? All right, Rob.
Take care.
Thank you. For more original interviews, surf over to our main website, MrMedia.com, MrMedia.com. And if you've enjoyed today's show, subscribe for free to Mr. Media via email, RSS, or iTunes, and you'll never miss a show. You can also download our new free Mr. Media mobile app in the Android market. And, of course, you can always listen with a piece of string in a tin can in soap opera land. Show your support of Mr. Media by supporting our sponsors, including Audible. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/radio. Again, that's audibletrial.com/radio for your free audiobook. We're also supported by thepartyauthority.us. Call DJ Ira for all your party entertainment needs nationwide at 1-800-DIAL-DJS or visit their website, thepartyauthority.us. If you've got an idea for a guest, a comment on today's show, or would like to advertise on Mr. Media, email me directly at bob@mrmedia.com. You can also call our 24-hour listener line, 727-498-4711. Some messages may be used in an upcoming show, and unless you live next door to Mr. Media, it's probably a toll call. You can also follow Mr. Media on Facebook, Twitter, or our new YouTube video channel. Thanks so much for joining us today. Really appreciate you sharing a piece of your day with Mr. Media. Thanks for listening. Folks, you can hear Mr. Media while on the go now with Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher is a free news and talk mobile app available for your smartphone, whether you use an iPhone, iPod Touch, Android, BlackBerry Curve, or Palm Pre. And when you download Stitcher to hear Mr. Media today, you have a chance to win some real money. Downloading is quick and easy. Just find Stitcher in your smartphone's app store. Download it. It's free. Takes seconds. Then, during registration, hit the promo code box and enter Mr. Media, that's MR Media, to get automatically entered to win $100. The latest episode of Mr. Media will be waiting for you in Stitcher's Favorites right on your phone. You'll get access to lots of other amazing shows, too. Always available to you on demand, no syncing. Some of my favorites include WTF with Mark Maron, Plus One Per Diem with Kevin Smith, and The Nerdist with Chris Hardwick. It's all free and all instant to you on Stitcher Smart Radio. And don't forget to win the money. Enter promo code Mr. Media, MR Media, when you register. And thanks for listening.
Hey, this is comedian Bill Engvall. I know what you're thinking. You cannot be a blue-collar comic because you were on the show with Mr. Media.